ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, host of Politics Now, the ABC's podcast unpacking the latest political news. Every week you'll hear me and the sharpest political minds at the ABC.
Because this has much, much higher stakes for the US and for us, frankly, than the conflict in the Middle East, the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. This is World War III stuff. We're talking about China, the US, the two big superpowers.
So join me for Politics Now on the ABC Listen app.
Catastrophe has a way of shaping leaders. Winston Churchill during World War II, George Bush during 9/11, or Scott Morrison during the Black Summer bushfires. It may define Prime Minister Anthony Albanese's leadership too, a leader under pressure to respond to the Bondi Beach terror attack in which 15 people were killed. Today, the Chief Political Correspondent at The Conversation, Michelle Grattan, on whether Anthony Albanese can rise to the challenge. I'm Andy Park on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Michelle, Sunday's attack at Bondi Beach sent a shockwave of grief through the Australian public, and although that grief is still raw, the political consequences have really already begun. Let's step through them, starting with the Prime Minister, who's been under a lot of pressure. He's been quite visible. He even met with the hero of Bondi, who disarmed one of the gunmen.
Very strong. Thank you. Your heart is strong. Thank you. Your courage is inspiring.
Thank you very much.
It was a great honour to meet Ahmed El Ahmed. He is a true Australian hero.
And I've noticed his use of the word evil repeatedly in describing this anti-Semitic act.
What we saw yesterday was an act of pure evil, an act of anti-Semitism, an act of terrorism on our shores in an iconic Australian location, Bondi Beach.
Is he striking the right tone?
I think this is throwing the Prime Minister somewhat onto the defensive. Many in the Jewish community have been saying, look, we predicted this. We've been saying for 2 years more action needs to be taken to fight anti-Semitism, and that something really bad is quite likely to happen. And now those people feel that those warnings weren't properly addressed. Another factor in this is that the Prime Minister is very much contrasted with New South Wales Premier Minns, who has all through this anti-Semitism crisis been very upfront, showing empathy, very much showing that the New South Wales government will do whatever it can, whatever it thinks it takes to address the issues.
We need to send a strong and clear repudiation of anti-Semitism in all of its forms. In all of its forms. There is no tolerance for racism or Jewish hatred in New South Wales or Australia.
Now, you could say all those efforts, in fact, didn't prevent it. But nevertheless, I think that many people in the Jewish community and outside are drawing that contrast. And the third thing I'd point to is that the Prime Minister's response has very much centred on gun control. And critics are saying, well, while gun reform is all very well, it's not really the heart of this event, this problem. It's not how it was carried out so much as the motives behind it, the climate in the community that contributed to it. So I think on all those fronts, the Prime Minister does have some problems.
Michelle, you'd probably remember better than me the response to the Port Arthur massacre and former Prime Minister John Howard, who famously stood up in front of a rally wearing a bulletproof vest underneath his suit.
I thank you for coming. John Howard apologised for the inconvenience the gun laws may cause.
I know that, I regret that, I apologise for that, but that is the basis of our decision.
And that crackdown on guns in the wake of Port Arthur really is a turning point in Australian gun policy history. John Howard's been out this week, and he says that the real cause of Sunday's attack is growing anti-Semitism.
I do not want this debate, post this horrible event, to be used, the focus on guns, to be used as a pretext to avoid the broader debate about the spread of hatred of Jewish people and anti-Semitism.
And that sentiment has been echoed by some Jewish leaders. The Israeli ambassador points out that the Jewish community in Australia is, for example, the only one that has to go through security to enter their place of worship.
I don't know when was the last time that you visit a temple, a church, or a mosque. The doors are open. Only the Australians of Jewish faith are forced to worship their gods behind closed doors, CCTV guards. It's insane.
Is there a little bit of anachronism here of the Prime Minister of today trying to, I suppose, emulate or replicate that gun reform policy of John Howard?
What I think we're seeing is the Prime Minister seizing on one aspect of the issues that surround this terrible event. That aspect is legitimate enough to say gun laws should be even tighter than they are, but it's not the whole issue. And as you say, critics, including John Howard, point out that the core of the problem we're talking about is this wider question of anti-Semitism. Now, of course, difficult as it might be to address gun reform, it is actually much, much easier to address than this more general issue, which goes to a whole lot of things and has sprung up in our community, not out of nowhere, because it was obviously lurking. We just didn't realise the extent of it. And of course, it was triggered by the attack on Israel in 2023. But it was obviously there under the surface, more or less unseen.
And the former Liberal Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, who is Jewish himself, has gone even further than John Howard. He visited Bondi and was absolutely scathing of the federal government, saying the Prime Minister needs to take personal responsibility for the deaths.
Our Prime Minister, our government, has allowed Australia to be radicalised on his watch. It's time for him to accept personal responsibility for the death of 15 innocent people, including a 10-year-old child. Guns may have stolen the life of 15 innocent civilians, but it was radical Islamist ideology that pulled the trigger. And if you, Prime Minister, can't say those words, Islamist ideology, if you can't speak them, you can't solve them.
One solution that the coalition and certainly Jewish groups say is the right solution is the report delivered by the Special Envoy for Anti-Semitism, Gillian Siegel. Now, she handed this report, which was asked for by the government. She was appointed by Prime Minister Anthony Albanese. What are the specific measures that she says will, in the Prime Minister's words, help eradicate anti-Semitism in Australia?
Well, there's a whole range of issues. The Prime Minister said, well, some things are being done already.
We have appointed the first ever anti-Semitism envoy. We've strengthened legislation to address anti-Semitism and hateful conduct, criminalise hate speech, advocating violence, criminalising doxing, a landmark ban on the Nazi salute and hate symbols. We're working with the envoy as well to produce a report card that'll be produced on universities for what they've done.
with.
But the controversial aspects of this report go to the possibility of defunding universities, cultural institutions, other institutions where there's anti-Semitism. And it's easy to see why this report has not been grappled with fully by the government before this. It was presented months ago, but those are very difficult and controversial recommendations, and many people would say they go beyond what is either practical or desirable, and they raise questions of judgment too. What measure do you use to say that anti-Semitism hasn't been tackled properly? So this is very hard, I think, for the government to now come to grips with. It's under pressure from the opposition, from the Jewish community, to do a lot more about this report. It hasn't actually made a formal response to that report in all those months, but now it's going to have to come to grips with it much more directly.
In your mind, if there is some resistance by the Prime Minister to adopt the Siegel Review fully, where does that sentiment come from? Is it the Labour rank and file, who, of course, have insisted on the recognition of a Palestinian state? Is the Prime Minister dragging his feet for any kind of reasons that you can identify?
Look, I think there are mixed feelings in the Labour Party. There's a spectrum on these whole Middle East issues, and that is reflected when things like this come up, when attention is focused on what are you going to do about certain recommendations. Certainly, this atrocity has put a lot more focus on that report and a lot more pressure on the government to not just sort of push it aside and say, yes, we're doing some things and we'll look at other things down the track. It's going to have to grapple with this. But I also think there's the nature of this report. Some of these recommendations are very drastic and I think to an extent not easy or even desirable to implement fully. So it's the report itself that's also a problem for the government.
I can't help but recall the former Attorney General George Brandis' comment that people in Australia have a right to be bigots. And I think in times of crisis, there is an opportunity for lawmakers to make a knee-jerk reaction and perhaps announce laws and reforms and legislation which ultimately can impinge on free speech and civil liberties. Is that a realistic concern?
Well, I sometimes think back to that Brandis comment, and that was in the context of the debate about a section of the Racial Discrimination Act.
Well, Mr. President, people do have a right to be bigots, you know. In a free country, people do have rights to say things that other people find offensive or insulting or bigoted.
Nevertheless, I think that times are very different from when George Brandis made that comment. There's a right to free speech, but that's not an unlimited right. And in easier times, in less divided and fraught times, the right to free speech is perhaps more dominant. We do have a crisis around anti-Semitism. There's no doubt about that. We have had a massacre. We therefore are looking at and valuing other rights above the free speech right. And also the argument, of course, about demonstrations, where demonstrations should be held. The New South Wales government tried to stop the demonstration on the Harbour Bridge, the pro-Palestinian demonstration. So I think that the whole question about the right to be a bigot, the right to say anything you want, and the limits on those rights has really come into the foreground of our political debate. And all this has come out of course, a war that's so far away in geographical terms from us, but very much in the minds of many in our community.
In fact, the New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns, says he's considering measures to restrict protest activity when there's a terrorist threat.
My concern is that a mass demonstration in this combustible situation with our multicultural community could light a flame that would be impossible to extinguish. So we're looking at reforms whereby when there is a terrorism designation in the state, the police commissioner may not accept applications for protests on the grounds that it will both stretch police resources and, secondly, add to community disharmony and, as a result, a combustible situation in the state.
The envoy, Gillian Siegel, herself says that anti-Semitism has been seeping into society. She points to the mass demonstrations across the Sydney Harbour Bridge against the war in Gaza earlier this year as one example.
And I know people saw that as a demonstration for peace, but we saw terrorist flags and glorifying extremist leaders there at that demonstration. These are Australian icons, and I see this targeting them as deliberate. And it's an attack on Australia, not just on the...
Is there a risk in this discussion about anti-Semitism that there's a distinction that's lost between violent extremists and the people that are pro-Palestinian, putting them all in one big analogous group, or to people who have legitimate criticisms about the policies and politics of the State of Israel?
Yes, I think that is a risk, but there's something of a spectrum here. Because you have at one end the violent extremists, and at the other end people who have a view, who turn up at a protest. But between those two, you also have people who go to the protests, take symbols of extremism, even if they are not themselves acting in any sort of violent way. They're not setting fire to things or blowing up things. But they, nevertheless, you could say, are potentially inciting others who might commit violent acts or acts like graffiti on buildings and so on. So even that is a quite complicated picture, I think, in such fraught times as we're in now.
So, Michelle, if the response to the Port Arthur massacre cemented John Howard's legacy and reputation, will the response to Bondi Beach do the same for Anthony Albanese?
John Howard's response contributed very much to a positive part of his legacy. There was no doubt about that. I think Anthony Albanese is in a very different position. I think in the minds of many critics, his general response on anti-Semitism has been found wanting. Maybe that's unfair, but I think he hasn't really got the tone right over the last year or two. What he will need to do in terms of a legacy is not have this issue turn into a sort of negative memory. He really needs to be seen to be really committed to the fight against anti-Semitism. But that battle does go to community sentiment. It really involves the whole community, and it's not going to be something that's going to be settled overnight by a set of laws or whatever happens to guns. It's just, political scientists would call this a wicked problem, and that's what it is.
Michelle Grattan is the chief political correspondent at The Conversation and professorial fellow at the University of Canberra. Audio production for this episode was by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Andy Park. ABC News Daily will be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.